You're listening to the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor.
I'm Roger Sutton. On October 30th, 2006, University of Michigan President Mary Sue Coleman laid out her vision of what she wants the university to look like when it celebrates its bicentennial in 2017. She noted that when Henry Tappan was named the first president of the university, he laid out a remarkable vision for an institution that at the time had fewer than 300 students, and he issued a challenge saying, "This young university, shall we not carry it forward to perfection?" Coleman's address was to the university's Faculty Senate Assembly.
Coming before this group always presents me with the challenge of capturing a little of everything. Everything that's underway at the university. It's a little bit like trying to describe the diverse interest and the expertise of the faculty in this room in 30 minutes or less. Now I want to spend some time this afternoon talking to you about new developments in the arts, emerging research in the sciences, and our partnerships in the state and beyond. Several task forces that I'm establishing and challenges threatening the momentum of the university. But let me begin with a survey. It's not about whether you support Jennifer Granholm or Dick DeVos or the fate of Republicans in Congress, and it doesn't involve robocalls that interrupt your dinner. It's a survey about health and well-being of Americans, older Americans to be specific. Now, I prefer the phrase baby boomers because it keeps us young, but it's a survey of those 30% of Americans who are 50 years or older. The Institute for Social Research has been interviewing some 27,000 people about their lives, their physical and mental health, retirement plans, personal finances, living conditions, jobs, and more. This is the Health and Retirement Study. It's known, and it melds economic, biological, and psychological research to create a remarkably detailed picture of this country's aging population. The results are used by scientists, policymakers, the medical community, and human service agencies. The study has been underway since 1992, and earlier this year, it received an additional $70 million in federal funding, the largest research grant in the university's history. It's been such a successful and transformative project that it's now being modeled worldwide, including South Korea, Israel, Mexico, and 11 countries in Europe. This is the University of Michigan and what we do best: deep, broad research that informs and shapes the world around us. It is a timely, vital examination of a social phenomenon that will affect all of us in one way or another, and the ISR is using sound social science to help explain the hows and whys of it. It exemplifies the breadth and depth of talent, intellect, and creativity at the University of Michigan. When Henry Tappan was named the university's first president, he laid out a remarkable vision for the university at a time when we had fewer than 300 students. He called for robust teaching in science, medicine, literature, and the arts. He proposed libraries, museums, laboratories, and an observatory. And he issued a challenge that has and always should inspire us. "This young university," he said, "shall we not carry it forward to perfection?" The University of Michigan will mark its 200th anniversary in 2017. It will be an extraordinary anniversary of a university that now has more than 54,000 students on three campuses, and it will give us pause to look at our many, many accomplishments. I want to talk today about what we want the university to look like at its bicentennial celebration. Henry Tappan provided us with an exceptional blueprint, and I believe we, faculty, staff, and students, must continue to strive for perfection that he envisioned. First and foremost is our quest for knowledge. It is the bedrock of our academic enterprise, and it is one that we must continually deepen and reinforce to address the complexities of today's world. I look at young faculty like Jason Guestwicki, and I see the future of research at Michigan. Dr. Gustwicki is a chemical biologist who studies proteins and their role in degenerative neurological diseases like Alzheimer's and Huntington's disease. He came to the university a year ago after doing outstanding science as a postdoctoral fellow at Stanford. He will tell you there are four reasons that he decided to come to the Life Sciences Institute: the physical space, the atmosphere, the environment, and the personalities to build the laboratory that he envisioned. He likes that our doctoral students value the importance of science that crosses academic borders, and that the interest of his faculty peers spans structural biology, chemistry, disease models, genetics, translational research, and biochemistry. This interplay between experts is essential to modern scientific discovery. Or as Dr. Gustwicki says, you can't ask for anything else within a short walk. We've devoted much time and resources at the university to faculty like Jason Gustwicki and our Life Sciences Enterprise. The Life Sciences Institute, the Undergraduate Science Building, Palmer Commons, and the Biomedical Science Research Building together represent nearly 1 million square feet of new space devoted to the three pillars of our life sciences effort: research, collaboration, and education. At the Life Sciences Institute, we now have 25 faculty who lead groups encompassing 500 researchers. Where our scientists at ISR examine the social consequences of aging, our researchers at the Life Sciences Institute are exploring the biological evolution of cells as we age. What they've discovered is a delicate balancing act between cells that renew and cells that die, a pivotal act that can dictate the likelihood of a person developing cancer. This is an amazing discovery of a cellular phenomenon, a genetic switch of sorts, that has vast implications for determining how long we as humans can live. This is just one of a number of remarkable findings by our scientists. We've achieved the critical mass envisioned 8 years ago by President Bollinger and the Life Sciences Commission. And across campus, we're revitalizing great advances and taking on exciting challenges in the life sciences in areas ranging from nanobiology to stem cell research, diabetes research, and more. We are now at an opportune time to look again at where we stand in the broad sweep of the life sciences, fields that are rapidly evolving, and determine directions we should take as the university that excels in biomedical research. The first of three task forces I'm announcing today will advise on emerging opportunities, strategic bearings, and collaborative possibilities in the life sciences. Collaboration will be an essential feature of our future work in the life sciences and other areas as well. Not only has the Life Sciences Institute been instrumental in the recruitment and retention of outstanding scientists in a number of departments, it has brought to the fore synergies that are unique to Michigan, particularly between engineering and the sciences. We have few peers with such profound combined strengths in engineering, medicine, and the sciences. I think of such programs as the Molecular and Behavioral Neuroscience Institute, and our work in cellular and molecular biotechnology engineering, or the Nanotechnology Institute for Medicine and Biological Sciences. We're on the threshold of understanding life and living organisms at the most basic level, and our enthusiasm for multidisciplinary science makes that possible. We're seeing this approach at the School of Public Health, which opened its new Crossroads building and tower last week. Among its many important features are 133 new lab benches in a shared environment, the same type of collaborative environment that defines the life sciences at Michigan. Public health scientists can expand and contract their laboratories as research evolves and changes. The philosophy of collaborative science is behind our newly announced Michigan Memorial Phoenix Energy Institute, which will model itself intellectually on the Life Sciences Institute. Finding renewable sources of energy is one of our most urgent global problems, and the university is in a unique position to make immense contribution to finding solutions. This is a natural fit for us. one that will pull together faculty from the sciences, technology, engineering, public policy, and economics. We have tremendous expertise in automotive and nuclear energy research and growing strengths in hydrogen research. I'm committing $9 million to recruit faculty in fields that complement our existing strengths. Physically, the Energy Institute will be housed in the Phoenix, in the Michigan Memorial Phoenix Laboratory, which was originally built on North Campus in the wake of World War II to study the peaceful uses of nuclear energy, and which we're renovating to meet today's research needs. Intellectually, the Energy Institute will be an open laboratory under the leadership of Dr. Gary Wass. I believe it can be a place that draws on the expertise of all of our schools and colleges because the creation, use, and distribution of energy are issues that cut many ways. The Energy Institute will be the unified voice of U of M energy research and education, and I want to see it become the leading center in the world of energy science, technology, and policy. Our robust research agenda has implications beyond policy, medicine, and technology. It can and does drive the economy of the region. This is something that I'm deeply committed to, and it's never been more important. We have an absolute responsibility to the state to help transform an economy that is flagging because of dramatic changes in the automotive industry. Listen to the words of Henry Tappan. A great university, by its expenditures, by the numbers which it brings together, by the industry which it calls into action, in its necessary goings on, is an important element of commercial prosperity. Could he have predicted that the university would be awarded $800 million annually to conduct research, or that our faculty would take their research and launch new businesses, at least two new businesses every economic quarter? And they're successful businesses. In the last 2 months alone, U of M spinoffs have attracted more than $100 million in venture capital funding, $30 million for NanoBio, $40 million for RenaMed, and $33 million for OncoMed. I want Ann Arbor to be a place where entrepreneurs flourish, and I believe we're seeing the power of the university to make this possible. There is, of course, the recent decision by Google to open a corporate office in Ann Arbor and create 1,000 jobs. This is rooted in our relationship with alumnus Larry Page and the university's monumental partnership with Google to digitize the holdings of our library. Perhaps there has been a more significant indicator of our role in the state's economic development, though. The 21st Century Jobs Fund, which awards money to up-and-coming high-tech firms throughout Michigan. When the first round of $137 million in funding was awarded last month, more than half the money went to Washtenaw County businesses and organizations. The applications for funding were reviewed by experts from outside the state of Michigan, and clearly they recognize the role that a research university plays in kickstarting the economy. The University of Michigan, along with Michigan State and Wayne State, can and will move our state forward. Every day, for the past 5 years, researchers at these three institutions have announced at least one invention, every day. And those inventions' disclosures have led to more than 500 license agreements for new technologies and systems. As a university research corridor, our institutions are playing a significant role in building the Michigan of tomorrow. Invention and research, the very fiber of our universities, will propel Michigan's economy. In addition to contributing to the economy, I want the University of Michigan to be more engaged at all levels with the region and state and indeed the larger world. And I want your advice as faculty as how we might best accomplish that. 2 years ago, I proposed the engaged university as a key theme. As I just noted a moment ago, there is much that we're doing, and the list of things that I could mention would be very long. But we can do more. The arts and humanities, tech transfer, community service, economic development, improvements to K-12 education are just some of the possible features of the engaged university. I want your ideas and advice about how we can better bring the intellectual capacity of our institution to bear on critical problems. Specifically, how can we be of greater service to the people of Michigan? Nothing speaks louder about our role as a great public research university than our relationship with the people of Michigan, and I'll be establishing a second university task force to help with this mission. All of these widened, collaborative, and proactive approaches to scholarship are the future of research at Michigan. But Michigan wouldn't be Michigan if we limited ourselves to research, impressive as it is. President Tappan predicted that we would be a great university because, in his words, whatever a student may need or desire is here to be found. And that is because of the countless perspectives we provide in our teaching, our programs, our libraries, and museums. A year ago, I told you about a $2.5 million investment to expand our work in team teaching and in developing courses and degrees that cut across academic boundaries. A faculty committee that represents all 19 schools and colleges has since done tremendous work in reviewing your proposals, 14 to date, for new undergraduate courses. One new course is being taught in the Ford School of Public Policy and promotes systematic thinking about problems of today, problems like globalization, trade issues, AIDS, and educational policies. A second course is based in the Center for Southeast Asian Studies and explores contemporary social issues, including labor standards, bird flu and SARS, the rights of women and children, and economic transitions. And a third course and one new program are in line for funding. The range of viewpoints that we can provide students with these courses and programs will enhance their ability to see challenges and opportunities through different lenses. In that same spirit, I'm excited to tell you today that we're dedicating the 2007 calendar year to a celebration of the arts from a global perspective. We're calling this celebration Arts on Earth, and it will be a dizzying array of coursework, performances, visiting scholars, artists, and symposia. As we're experiencing with the current residency of the Royal Shakespeare Company, the arts give deep dimension to the world's humanity, to cultures and conflicts. So we'll be treated to Professor Bright Shing's music theater work, The Silver River, based on a Chinese myth that is 4,000 years old. And we will experience a staging of Arthur Miller's work, Playing for Time, which shows the plight of musicians in concentration camps who were forced to perform for the Nazis. The Miller play will be performed in conjunction with the grand opening of the Arthur Miller Theater and the Walgreen Drama Center on North Campus. Mark your calendars for March 29th through April 8th for opening festivities. Humans and the arts create each other, and Arts on Earth will explore the dynamic relationship throughout the world. We'll look at this transformative human experience and its impact on us as individuals and as a social force. This celebration draws on the expertise of many disciplines in many colleges and schools. This is a faculty-driven initiative, and I hope that you will find a way to contribute to it. I'm also looking to faculty as well as staff for input about how we might improve the aesthetics on the campus with sculpture, murals, and other outdoor art. Our lovely campus should be livelier to the eye with more public art, and I believe we can elevate our physical environment to one that suits a university of our stature and character. I've asked James Stewart, director of our Museum of Art, to chair the President's Advisory Committee on Public Art that will develop a strategic approach to seeing that our physical spaces equal the vibrancy of our academic enterprise. I have yet another need for your input on how we can expand the perspectives we offer our students, and that is with our approach to China, both in teaching and research. The level of our engagement with China is truly astounding and exciting. We have a remarkably long history of involvement with that nation, dating back to President Angel's tenure as U.S. minister to China in the 1880s. As you know, I led a university delegation to Beijing and Shanghai in June of 2005, and the momentum of that trip continues to generate ripples of activity across campus and beyond. We want to test several hypotheses in our work with China. First, we want to build partnerships that will allow our faculty and students and the university as a whole to reach their fullest potential in a globalizing world. Second, that the lessons of our success as a great public research university can help produce change, not just on one campus, but throughout Chinese higher education. And third, that we can learn much from the ambitious experiment in higher education that is now underway in China. There is ample evidence that supports each hypothesis. This past May, the university hosted some 25 leaders of Chinese universities in an intensive two-week forum that covered topics ranging from university governance and finances to campus construction and philanthropy. The Chinese university administrators were full of questions about American higher education and the role of public universities, and we presented them with a full picture of the challenges and rewards that come from operating a great research institution. The provost office has appointed a new coordinator for the U of M China initiatives, Zhen Zhu, and she's taken on the formidable task of inventorying all of our existing academic programs at Chinese universities, as well as identifying new opportunities in China for our schools and colleges. I'm going to establish a third faculty task force to examine the range of our current efforts with China and to develop recommendations about new opportunities we might explore in cooperative research and education. The university's longest international relationship has been with China, and I want us to continue to build on this partnership for tomorrow's students and faculty. When talking about partnerships, I need to give you an update on the Michigan Difference Campaign and the support we're receiving from philanthropically minded alumni, staff, and faculty like you. That support includes gifts from 12,000 U of M faculty and staff members who make up the heart of the Michigan Difference Campaign. Chronologically, we're at the halfway point of the public phase of the campaign. We began the kickoff celebration in the spring of 2004, and will end in December 2008. Financially, we're at 90% of our $2.5 billion goal, and we've raised more than $2.2 billion. Of course, it's great. The inclination is to say, well, we're almost done. But I've been in the thick of a capital campaign, as has Jerry May, our Vice President for Development. And we can both tell you that this is the hardest part of the campaign. Two significant challenges remain for us: raising money for need-based scholarships and for endowed professorships. As faculty, you want the best students. As president, I want the best students. Together, one way we can attract these students is with stronger financial aid packages, because money matters. And I don't want to lose great students because their family finances can't bear the weight of tuition. To broaden our student body, I'm creating the President's Challenge Fund to help attract more qualified students who may not apply because they believe that a Michigan education is unaffordable. This is a challenge to donors to help add to the richness of our university. For any gift or pledge they make for need-based scholarships, I will match it with discretionary funds. If a donor gives $75,000, the president's office will match it with $75,000. I will match gifts up to $1 million and will direct the money be endowed. I feel strongly about reaching out to low and moderate income students, and I'm looking for partners to increase need-based aid. Our donors have already created 760 new scholarships with their gifts. I'm now asking that they build up our need-based scholarships. Family finances should not keep qualified students from enrolling and contributing to our university. Money matters for faculty recruitment, too, and that is why there's a second component to the President's Challenge Fund. In Henry Tappan's day, the going rate for endowing a professorship was $40,000. Today it's $2 million. To date, our donors have endowed 128 new professorships, which are so important for attracting and keeping faculty at Michigan. I want to accelerate this process. I'm committing up to $10 million to match gifts for the next 20 professorships endowed by our donors. If a donor gives $1.5 million over 3 years, the president's office will match it with $500,000. For a donor, that's a fully named professorship at 75% of the cost. It's a great deal. Most importantly, the match is made after the donor pays the first $500,000, which enables us immediately to begin searching for the chair. I'm very excited about this challenge fund. It will advance the Michigan Difference campaign, and that means that it will advance the future of our university. Now, I've been talking a lot about positioning the university for our bicentennial in 2017, which will be a momentous event. Another more important date will play a crucial role in determining the university's future, and that is November the 7th. The ambition and energy of the U of M are not possible without diversity. Diversity of people, of academic institutions, of academic disciplines, and research initiatives. That's threatened by Proposal 2, the wrongly called Michigan Civil Rights Initiative, that puts at risk many of the gains we have made. To solve the world's problems, we need people who see the world in different ways. We know that diversity makes that possible. Psychology professor Patricia Gurin and political science professor Scott Page have conducted groundbreaking, path-breaking research into the benefits of diversity. Susan Kaufman, the associate director for the Center for the Education of Women, has created two valuable reports about the impact of Proposal 2 on employment, education, and contracting in our state. I'm personally crisscrossing the state to talk with students and families, women's groups, and alumni to tell them how dangerous I think Proposal 2 is for U of M and the state. If Proposal 2 passes, we will be less attractive to students, to faculty, and to potential employers of our graduates. I'm deeply concerned about the climate that it's creating on the campus. Our enrollment numbers are down for African American students, and that worries me and angers me because we should have a student body that represents all backgrounds. Henry Tappan said, "We must take the world just as full as it is." The University of Michigan is seen nationwide as a model of diversity in higher education. As president, I'm committed to seeing that we remain diligent about changing the face of the campus so that it looks like the world around us. Regardless, though, of what happens with Proposal 2, I'm fully and completely wedded to building diversity at the University of Michigan. We must continue to send the message that every student at Michigan deserves to be here, and that we are a university that welcomes all. Last week, the former president of Poland, Aleksander Kwaśniewski, was on campus. He's a fascinating person who was equally fascinated with the university. He joined me for the Michigan-Iowa football game and was stunned by the sight of 110,000 people in one place. This from a man who's been to the last 6 Olympic Games. He then went to 2 performances of the Kirov Orchestra that were part of the Shostakovich Centennial Festival. And then the next day, he went to the opening night of Antony and Cleopatra by the Royal Shakespeare Company. He told me, "I feel like I'm in the center of New York City." Our visitor from Poland could not have known that Henry Tappan once challenged the university, dare to be in advance of the whole country if need be. There's really no place like Ann Arbor. Life-changing research, a distinctive arts environment, a diverse range of perspectives of people and ideas combined to create an unparalleled university. 3 months ago, the Board of Regents reappointed me to a second term at Michigan. It is an honor to be president of this university. I can honestly say that I've never had a job that is so rewarding, so challenging, and so enjoyable. You help make that so. The faculty at Michigan are the finest in the world, and you make this the best place to teach, to learn, and to work. I'm anxious to hear your questions and share my thoughts about the direction of the university. But first, I want to thank you for your service, your commitment to Michigan. Together, let's work to carry the university toward perfection. Thank you.
This has been a production of the University of Michigan News Service. Visit us on the web at www.umich.edu/news.